Thank you. And you took like 10 years off me when saying I'm pursuing a PhD, so thank you for that. I hope you can all see me. I'm quite short, so if I might stand a little bit on the side. Thank you for the invitation to this fantastic city. I think Budapest is my favorite city. Don't tell that to the rest of them, but it's my favorite city in Europe. And so I'm going to share something that I think my colleagues before have spoken of a little bit to citizen science, right, and citizen health. And when I started to research a bit on this topic on measles, right, I was asked, like, why don't we write something that is trendy measles? I'm like, really trendy? And when I started to look at the data, I was so surprised to find the scope of the problem that we're facing. Also because I come from Colombia, a country in development, and I worked as a doctor there, and I saw the benefits of immunization, right? So it was quite impressive to hear that actually it has become a current problem. And the problem is huge. I mean, we're seeing enormous amount of data. I'm also a researcher, scientist. I love data. You can see 3,000 cases, people contracted measles in Europe. It's more than in the last decade. It's incredible. In the U.S., the last 3 months, in 2019, has seen more cases than in the last year. This is incredible. Why? Something that is supposed to be eradicated. In fact, four countries, European countries, have lost their immunization or measles-free status. This is something that we should all be worrying about. It's so big that, of course, the World Health Organization is also incredibly interested in the impact, and you can see how it moves through the last decade, the last one being the last year, how important this problem is becoming, right? So much that the World Health Organization has included measles among these 10 very severe population health problems as one of the priorities to tackle. And you can see many of these are really problems that we find ourselves with every day. But having something that was supposed to be eradicated, coming back, it's something that we should be worrying about as a scientific community, as parents, as patients, as population, as a healthcare providers, right? But is it only a population health problem? Is it affecting us and our families and our children and us when we visit any country that is measles-free, not measles-free anymore? I think it's also about the impact that it's creating in research. And we're talking today about science and how science should be open and how the funding in research should be also very consciously devoted. Something that we should not be worrying about or we didn't worry about in 10 years is now becoming an objective of funding. And you can see the increase in research output in the last 10 years. And I just searched for two terms, vaccine and hesitancy. I didn't search for all the synonyms or variants or other words that represent the same concept. But the increase is more than 10,000 in research output. Do we know how much, what's the economic impact of all these funds being invested in something that should be already not a problem? And we're diverting those funds from some other more pressing issues that really need our support. Not only in research output on hesitancy, but all these areas of related to vaccination and vaccines in the topic of immunization, all this is the output, the topics that are being published on in the last 10 years probably. So you can see it's a big impact. It's not just about healthcare, it's not just about population health. It's about also funding and research funding, right? And also about how this is being communicated and how the research is translating to our society. And my colleague before, Nicolo, he also talked about the social impact, the alternative metrics that we're using to evaluate that impact. So it's not just about how many citations we have. And this is the most cited, the first article is the most cited article in that topic of immunization and vaccination. The second article is the fourth one. It does have a lot of citations. But you can compare the social impact of both. And we can see with the alternative metrics how the usage and the social media, the repercussions of the first article, which is more of a fundamental research article. The second one is a huge impact, society impact, how this is uptaken by the governments and the people, right? So alternative metrics, incredibly important now that I take advantage of this opportunity because, again, as a researcher, I also do lectures on science and impact factor. I am hugely against it, and I think social repercussion is far more important than the number of citations a journal has. So again, thank you for that introduction before, because I do agree with my colleagues. So what is the problem with immunizations? What is the anti-vaccine movement? Is it just the tip of the iceberg of something bigger? I do certainly think so. What if you don't know what you don't know, right? 1890s up to 1900s, heroin for cough, that's fantastic. What do we have now? A huge opioid addiction problem, particularly in the US, where opioid medication is widely used as pain relief, but certainly something that we have to be aware of. What about soda? What about Coca-Cola, 7-Up, our youngest customers, right? This was very recently published, Mortality Association of Mortality with Soft Drink Consumption. 1950s, yeah, more doctors smoke Camels, fantastic. This is a great advertisement for one of the population's greatest killers, right? So what's the difference between all of this? What has changed, or what changes thing? What changes in the world? What makes us change opinion? Information, right? The availability of information, the dissemination of information. So I think there's one thing that we are all here for, is providing credible, current, evidence-based information. We're all in the same boat. We all want people to be aware. We're not just keeping information for ourselves. We want it to be out there so that my kid goes to my school and doesn't get measles, right? So I thought of it as a three-pillar approach. Information for who? And there might be many, many approaches to this, but I think there are three important that I particularly like, which is informing the population. And I didn't write patients because we are all patients, and we will always be, or we will be, or we have been. So just population, information that is engaging, that people understand, so that they can uptake it and then promote it. Who else needs to be educated? Healthcare professionals. They are the ones delivering the information. Clinicians, doctors, nurses, anyone who is in contact with the patient should have credible information to be shared and trustworthy. And finally, a very important pillar that I love particularly is transparency and quality in research. How do we evaluate the data that is being put out there? We have all heard about papers being retracted in very important journals. Why is that? Data is not transparent, and the communication of data is not equal to everyone. So just a little bit, very tip of the iceberg on these three areas. Population. We need to deliver information that is easily understandable in the right format, in the right language, through the right media, with enough validation, not Wikipedia probably, not just Google, but enough validation from any of us, those who hold the knowledge, to our patients and to families and to population itself. Not only from providers, but also institutions that are worldly known, like the World Health Organization, you can find important information there. It's not that easily accessible. That's the problem. Sometimes information is kept in places where it's difficult to reach, but there are certainly many, many initiatives that provide population information for patients and populations. So we need to start also improving our practices in discovering that information and being critical about the information that is being presented. Regarding healthcare professionals, definitely journals and are an impressive source of information, validated information. Then higher in the scale of evidence, meta-analysis, systematic revisions, they do provide the highest level of evidence until now. But definitely we have a way of communicating information that healthcare providers can understand, and coming from any discipline, as I said, nursing, clinical background. But we do have responsibility in making sure that that information that is provided has the quality and the validation to be then translated into clinical practice. That is our responsibility and commitment also as providers of information. And we would think that is something that is that should be known already, or that it's just a simplicity, but it's not. And this happened very recently in Spain. A pediatrician was disqualified for giving advice that is not sustained by current credible evidence-based information to her patients. So we tend to think that the information is out there and that everyone reads it. Actually, that's not certainly the truth. We also have a responsibility in making sure that the information is delivered in the right format, in the right way, to clinicians. We are all humans. We do make mistakes, so that can happen. What are the barriers to that wrong-making, if I may call it that? What are we doing to avoid patient harm, right? And finally, but definitely not least important, is how do we provide information, enough information, to enhance or ensure transparency and quality in research? Well, there are certainly great initiatives like the Equator, which groups most of the protocols and guidelines on transparency, to enhance transparency of health research. We should all use that. We should be, any of us who are in contact with researchers, we should be promoting good practices among our researchers and the way they report their results, because we don't only want to report results that are beneficial for our own country or our own setting. We want them to be translatable to any other country or setting. We also have a program where I'm working at now, which is sharing good practices in research. I have been a medical writer for more than 4 years now, and we have to ensure what all our colleagues have also talked before, Paul and Nicola. Did I mention your name right? We want to enhance good practices. We want to move away from, I need to publish because I need to reach a better job. I need to publish because my work creates a social impact. It has a scientific importance. So I too like to share some of my experience in this. We also have a researcher academy, without any cost in this case. And we were also talking, we were discussing that in the previous lecture. We need to support our researchers to promote better research. So we are giving them tools to enhance that, then to communicate their findings. It's equally important. Nobody's going to do it for us. We have to ensure that. So yes, indeed, scientists are indispensable for this purpose, to reassure the public. But if the information stays there, is not communicated wisely, you know, or effectively, it just stays there. So is this just the start of optimal care for our patients? We have all a commitment and a role to play, all of us who are information providers. We do have the role to make sure that we actually educate rather than indoctrinate. And you can see this is from one of the most renowned journals. So we're all investing in this. We're all worrying about this because we might be the next patient, right? And you saw, some of you might have seen last year's presentation on the project of the Amazon by my colleague, Laís Junqueira, how we are also participating in these sorts of projects across the globe, and how we all reached some of the same basic conclusion, right? We need prevention, early detection to avoid. This was focused on cervical cancer, which is the biggest killer cancer in women in Latin America. So we have a role as information providers. Timely correct treatment. What's the focus of this, or the conclusion, or the basis? Empowering people with information. So the same happens here. The problem with measles is just the tip of the iceberg. For me, of a lack of information that is credible, that is given in the right format and at the right time to the right people, we have definitely a challenge in there, because we cannot continue investing in things or population health problems that should have been eradicated a long time ago. And that's what my message wanted to be. I think I have 3 minutes to spare, but definitely together we can change the future. We work, all of us together, enhancing good quality in research, making sure that we have an open science adventure to improve the quality of our research and our research processes. And hopefully we will get some questions via the app. And that was my time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. We are on track with the agenda, and we have 3 minutes if there are a question that wants to come from the room. We don't have a question for Jimena on Slido, which I hope they will come. Is there anyone who wants to address a question right now? Not for the moment. You are still warming up. And you have, Daniel.
You said your purpose. Okay, first, I liked your presentation very much. You said your purpose is to empower people, patients. Now, I don't think any of these girls you showed in the Amazonas read your journals.
I'm sure.
But that's my question. I put it a bit unpolitely. But.
No, it's fine. I understand perfectly. Of course, this is not a single effort of one vendor or provider. We should be providing evidence to decision makers and policy makers so that they can translate that information into actionable projects that deliver the information in the right format to the population. So we're just a piece of the puzzle. We can collaborate, we can produce information, but definitely if it's not working together with government, it's impossible to get that bridge across. So we're just a part of it, trying to ensure that quality information is produced and is validated, but definitely we will not ever be able to do it alone. It needs collaboration from everyone. So the way this project works is sitting down with government and policymakers and then understanding if there's a challenge in language, of course there will be. Even in geography, how do you get there if you had to go through a river for hours, right? So there are many other, I think, initiatives like providing wearables and apps, for example, in prepartum care. In distant areas of Peru, they're using wearables to make sure that mother doesn't start labor without the proper care. So we have to sit down with people who actually develop the policies, make our information available, and then work with them together to overcome the barriers. But we're just a tiny piece of the puzzle. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, too.